In the name of the living God, creating, redeeming, and sustaining. Amen. Earlier this week, my oldest daughter, Olivia, came home very excited to have learned some new music in music class. She said, "Mom, I'll play it for you on Alexa so you can hear it. It's about Taco Bell." I was very interested to hear a song about this fast food restaurant so near and dear to my heart. I listened as Olivia prompted the technology. "Alexa, play the Taco Bell canon." Alexa replied, "Sure, playing the Paco Bell canon indeed." The Paco Bell canon indeed commenced with its familiar notes. "That's it," Olivia replied, "the Taco Bell canon." Whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me. If you've ever been to our family service at 9:15, you learn very quickly a lot about children. They wiggle, they make noise, they squirm. If they like the music, they get up and dance. If given the opportunity, they are eager to touch, taste, feel, explore holy things like the bells, the candles, the chalice, and the paten. There's this innocence to little kids. Like the Taco Bell canon, one little girl, I may have mentioned her to you before, lit up on the internet last year with her analysis of God's real name, Howard. In the video, we presume it's her mom who asks, "What is God's name?" And the girl says, "Howard." And the mom says, "Why? Howard? Why?" And the girl breaks into the Our Father, saying, "Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name." Mom laughs and innocence prevails again. Today we find the disciples in a conversation with Jesus who explains to them, not for the first time, but for the second time, the reality that the Son of Man will suffer and die, and then 3 days after being killed, rise again. The disciples clearly don't get it, nor do they want to get it. They go on down the path, afraid to ask for clarification. Instead, they break out into a skirmish. "Who's the greatest among us?" It's easy to miss in Jesus' tender and simple answer how truly radical his answer is. As pastor blogger Debbie Thomas reflects, Jesus doesn't say, "Welcome the child," because it's a kind or loving or generous thing to do. He says, "Do you want to see what God looks like? Do you want to find God's stand-in hidden here among you? Are you curious about the truest nature of divine greatness? Then welcome the child. Welcome the child, and you welcome God." End quote. I think it's easy for someone who hasn't been around children much to sentimentalize this gospel. Jesus must liken children to God because they are so innocent and sweet and good. But the children I know are also curious, questioning, adamant, active, generous, jealous, bored, loud, quiet, conscientious, destructive, intensely reflective, and exhausting. When we welcome children. We open ourselves to welcoming God. What might children have to teach us about God? Well, I think children teach us to ask questions when we don't know, to explore hard realities. Jesus lays out some really challenging realities to his disciples. And instead of wondering, what is this that Jesus is talking about? They avoid it. They avoid what he said and they shift the conversation to a much less pressing and petty conversation. But I found that children are like a dog with a bone. They hear something challenging and they want to know more. Jesus invites us to ask hard questions rather than draw away when things get confusing or tough. Jesus helps us to wonder by showing us the child is one of wonder, opening their imaginations. Now, the disciples' destination in today's gospel is Capernaum. I traveled to Capernaum on a journey through the Holy Land in 2011, and in the side aisle of the ancient ruins of a synagogue there, there's a children's game etched in stone. The archaeologist we traveled with pointed it out. He thinks it was there to keep the children busy while the adults prayed. In our 9:15 family service, Sally provides whiteboards with special crayons every week so our children can make art out of their prayers. Throughout the service, children are busy listening and busy creating. And those prayers get placed behind the altar in Hannaford Hall as an offering during communion. They hear difficult scriptures read. We don't shy away from those. And we see the children transform what they've heard on the prayer boards with their imaginations. I had a woman in her 40s who was dedicated to worship and came to me after worship one day, just exasperated. She'd lost her spark and her joy and wonder in worship. The worship music that she'd formerly been part of, leading, had been disbanded. She had this longing to express herself creatively. She looked at all the kids coloring in the pews and was a little envious. So she received permission from the clergy to start making art at the back of the nave. And for years, as the children around her colored and the preacher preached, Monica made magnificent liturgical art. Children teach us what God's power really looks like. Now, in Jesus' time, children really had no rights. They were considered property, along with the wives and the slaves and the cattle. Jesus said, "You want to see greatness? Look at the child and learn." In every culture, still today, children are at the mercy of someone who's bigger, stronger, more able than they are. Just think of how a baby, though, commands the attention of its parents. The first days of a baby's life, the baby wakes up every 2 to 3 hours, completely dependent on someone else in order to eat, be clean, feel safe, and grow. Jesus takes the vulnerable, dependent child among the power-seeking disciples and says, "You want to know power? Learn to be vulnerable, dependent, invisible, and low." In God's economy, greatness is earned through service, sacrifice, and empathy with the smallest and the least. Observe a child and encounter more fully the power of God. Children teach us to trust that there is always more than enough. In her memoir, The Cloister Walk, Kathleen Norris tells a beautiful story about St. Thérèse of Lisieux. When Thérèse was 4 years old, she was shown a handful of colorful ribbons and asked to choose one. Entranced, she simply responded, "I choose all." The disciples, arguing along the road, probably don't actually believe that all could be an option. There has to be a first, a best, a winner in their minds. And then Jesus places that child in the center and reminds them to stop competing. Start noticing that by following the way of his love, openness, and abundance, that there is plenty for all. If you're curious about discovering how children might point us toward God, come worship at 9:15 at Calvary sometime. You'll witness children ringing a gong to begin worship, then quieting down sometimes and lighting a candle to remind us of God's light among us. And then experience worship in a space designed especially for children to worship. Watch them just be themselves. Perhaps one of the most powerful truths about our Christian faith is that God emerged on this earth as a vulnerable human infant in the person of Jesus Christ. That narrative continues when, in the midst of challenging mature realities and immature adult responses, Jesus says in today's gospel, "You want to find me? Look at that child. You welcome that child. You welcome me. You welcome me. You welcome the Creator of all. Look to the child, all children, who capture the heart of God." Amen.